So a doctor will look at your symptoms and say, oh, well, they're listless, they don't enjoy life, they feel tired, you know, they're not taking enjoyment in their life and all these things. And then what they want to do is they want to jump to the diagnosis because then they can start treating you and blah, 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 blah. But your state is independent of the diagnosis, and the diagnosis is not your state. One is not the other. Hi there, welcome to the Deep Psychology Podcast. I'm your host, Ross Edwards, and this is episode 150, The Diagnosis Obsession, part 2, following on from part 1 last week. As we spoke about last week, diagnoses are useful tools, but they're not perfectly true nor absolute, and they can also be deeply harmful. So here you're going to learn how to view and use diagnoses in a healthier way. Before we get into that, I just want to say I've got new long form episodes every Wednesday and snippets on Thursday, Sunday and Tuesday, all at 9 p.m. Central European time, 8 p.m. UK time and 3 p.m. Eastern time. Make sure to subscribe on Apple or Spotify, and if this resonates, my fortnightly newsletter is the best place to follow my latest thinking. You'll find a link in the description to that, and you can find my books there too if you want to go really deep. Really recommend you go and listen to part one after you've listened to this one, because there we speak about a few central aspects of this topic, and today we're just following on, so it's good. If you want a full overview of this topic, I would recommend following up with the first part after this one. Also want to say before we go any further that I am not a qualified mental health professional and I cannot give diagnoses nor treat conditions. However, as I told you last week, I have, for one thing, been a mental health patient at one point in my life. And although I'm not in the sort of mainstream psychological field, I think that's an advantage because I can have unique opinions that I don't depend on diagnosing people to make a living. And so in my coaching work, I never diagnose people nor treat people for diagnoses, meaning that I can be possibly a bit more objective about them and more creative in how I see them, I think. And really what you're probably going to see in this part two and in part one when you listen to it is that I've got a different view to probably a lot of doctors and psychologists on this topic. So let's continue on from where we left off. Where we left off last week was that healthcare depends on diagnoses. Now, I'm not going to go into the details, but my basic argument was that healthcare professionals are trying to diagnose you. That's what they're trying to do. And this introduces so much bias, financial bias, epistemic bias, lots of things. And so already the diagnosis is a biased method for helping people, treating people, okay? What I'd like to start with this week is probably my main point of the entire two-part series, which is to say that a diagnosis is a heuristic. And a heuristic really just means a convenient tool. So I said in the introduction that a diagnosis is not perfect or absolute. So what is it? Well, this is what I would say. It's a heuristic. It's a tool. Now, if you're not sure what a heuristic is, it's either an adjective or it's a noun. And the definition I found on the internet was relating to a usually speculative formulation, serving as a guide in the investigation or solution of a problem. So basically, a diagnosis is a speculative formulation used as a guide in curing people, right? That's what I think a diagnosis really is. However, how often is it presented in that way? Not very often. Think about what happens when you get a diagnosis. What's happening? A professional analyzes you, they ask you questions, depends on what they're diagnosing you for, trying to diagnose you for, but they'll ask you questions and they'll maybe take a few measurements or they'll take samples or whatever. And then what they're doing is they're checking their information, their data that they've taken from you or from your body or whatever. They're checking for key markers, okay? Now, based on these markers, what they do is they then offer a diagnosis, which is really just a name describing a set of common markers that repeat across individuals and have been grouped together as a single illness or condition, right? So obviously this is imperfect because, well, there's so many reasons, but see, it's a generalization for one thing. The diagnosis is a generalization because it's aggregated across individuals, right? So you're being compared to other individuals with similar symptoms to you, right? That's why it's necessarily just a guide, because you're never going to have the exact same condition as someone else, the exact same symptoms. What they're looking for is they're looking for consistency across people or matches, right? And we all know people that have been misdiagnosed or not diagnosed when they should have been diagnosed. However, what the diagnosis does in this sense, when they take data and then they check across, you know, they check across common diagnoses and they check across other patient data and so on, what it does is it simplifies the process and it quickly captures your condition. So instead of having to describe all your symptoms and all your inner experiences and all your data, they can just say, yeah, depression, clinical depression, for example. So a diagnosis, it sounds like theoretical physics, you know, when we think of it them normally, we think of it as like theoretical physics. It's like very cut and dry. It's all very logical. It all fits together. There's not much wiggle room. But actually, it's more like experimental physics. It's quite hodgepodge. It's put together. It's done for practicality. And it's done as like a kind of risk reduction, as a kind of to reduce the amount of false positives and all that. And once you have this heuristic description of a patient's problem, you can then treat it, medicate it, monitor it, and you can do all this legally and within standard medical practice. So everyone's happy. Are they happy though? Because we never tend to think of diagnoses as a practical tool. We think of them as an absolute description of your condition. It cannot be questioned and it cannot be wrong. Even though, you know, a lot of us probably realize that it's not perfect, I think in the back of our minds, we sort of believe it to be like that. And we think that just because we have a diagnosis now, well, the doctors completely understand my health problem and everything's going to get better. This is not so much of a problem in, say, things like having a broken leg or a fractured elbow or brain damage or something along those lines. Something that is very physically obvious. It's not such a problem, although, of course, there's no two broken arms that are the same, are there? Like, what is a broken arm? It's a general category it's a word we've come up with to describe something that never actually repeats exactly, but, you know, it's close enough that we can give it a name. In mental health, things are a lot less cut and dry. For all the reasons I mentioned last week, because I gave a long talk about the diagnostic process and about how subjective sort of problems like depression, anxiety and stress and so on are very sticky. But imagine you've got this heuristic, it's a practical tool that healthcare professionals use, applied to something as slippery as mental health. It's very, very imperfect. And what I would say is, because diagnoses are a tool, their effectiveness is very context dependent, because a tool only works in a certain circumstance. Like if you're trying to undo a bolt and you're trying to use a screwdriver, well, good luck with that. You're going to need a spanner, and you're going to need a spanner that's the right size as well. Now, a diagnosis is the same. You know, it's a tool, but tools are necessarily bound to their context. And what I think happens all too often in medicine is it's not recognized that this is a tool. I'm not sure if doctors are taught that it's a tool or how they view it, but I don't get the sense that they actually see it like that on a day-to-day basis. And you're going to get a much greater understanding of the limitations of diagnoses right now when we talk about what is the actual reality behind the diagnosis. So as I said, the diagnosis is a heuristic tool. It's a description. It's a summary. It's like a shorthand way of describing more or less accurately what the doctor thinks is happening to you, right? However, one thing is the diagnosis and the label and the simplification and the heuristic tool, the useful tool, and another is your actual state. So your body, your mind, your emotions, your behavior, before we give it a label. So you might, if you're depressed, you might feel listless, you might feel hopeless, you might not take enjoyment in your life anymore, and these kind of things. This is your state. That is not depression. That is a state. That is a set of descriptions about your inner state. That is not depression, right? In and of itself. You see the difference. We can, whether or not you get a diagnosis for those things as being symptoms of depression, they're an inner state. They are a set of states that you're experiencing. So that's what I mean by your state. Now, what's so important about this? Well, the thing is that until you call something X, Y, or Z, until you call something stress, or until you call it ADHD, until you call it anxiety, or until you call it depression, there is no actual ADHD, anxiety, depression as such. Because your state is independent of your diagnosis, right? It doesn't matter what name we give it. We could call it apple pie. It still wouldn't change your inner state, no matter what we call it. Why am I saying this? Because the diagnosis is a label, right? It's a label. And the diagnosis is, again, it's a general description we're applying to a set of symptoms that is repeatedly observed across people. So a doctor will look at your symptoms and say, oh, well, they're listless, they don't enjoy life, they feel tired, they're not taking enjoyment in their life and all these things. And then what they want to do is they want to jump to the diagnosis because then they can start treating you and blah, 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 blah. But your state is independent of the diagnosis, and the diagnosis is not your state. One is not the other, right? The diagnosis, the label, as I said, is just a heuristic tool, a description, right? Now, this is like, it's such an obvious thing when you think about it. Like, it's so obvious, but no one talks about it, and no one realizes that this is what's going on. And you're going to see the power of this just in a minute. What I want to say before that is that two people with the same diagnosis, let's say you get diagnosed with depression, right? Two people could have been diagnosed with depression on the same day by the same doctor, but have wildly different symptoms, right? So, and also on the converse of that, two people could have very similar symptoms, but be diagnosed with something totally different on a different day by a different doctor, right? So why am I saying this? Because clearly the state and the diagnosis are independent of one another, right? The state exists on its own. And even something like a broken arm is not an obvious thing, because as I said, there's no two broken arms the same, right? I'm sure if you're a doctor or a surgeon, you've maybe seen broken arms that are very similar, but exactly the same. I really doubt it. Like, think of Think of all the minuscule differences that there could be in two broken arms, right? And this illustrates why the diagnosis is a description. If no two broken arms are the same, then the term broken arm must just be a general description of something, right? So another thing that you realize when you look at this is that the condition or the illness is not just like this kind of virus that reproduces itself in people. Like, there's not this thing called depression that reproduces itself in people as if it had a life of its own. And this is how we talk about depression a lot, or mental illnesses. It sounds like it's just this thing that reproduces itself in us. But when you realize that the diagnosis, that there's no such thing as depression per se, there's a bunch of states, and there's, if you have a certain number of them, or if you have like enough matching, there's a set of theoretical states that a depressed person could have. And if you match enough of them, we call you depressed. No, we don't call you depressed. We say that you have depression, right? But that's not, see, that never, even if we get the same diagnosis as someone else, as a million other people, it's never going to be exactly the same for any of those two people, right? So the diagnosis is not primary. Your state is primary. And so what we're really addressing when we're addressing someone's health is we're addressing the state that they are in, the actual things that they're experiencing on a day-to-day level, not a diagnosis. We're not treating a diagnosis, we're treating a state. You cannot treat a diagnosis, right? Doesn't make any sense. So, and this is a key point. This is why I don't think diagnoses are always necessary, that they're always accurate, or they're even logical. Because we could just say, instead of saying you're depressed, you have depression, you have anxiety, you have ADHD, what we could do is give patients, or give someone a list, a very thorough list of their inner state. They don't have to walk away with this label that has a lot of stigma attached to it and all sorts of other problems that we're going to continue to discuss as this goes on, particularly in the next section. We're never treating a diagnosis. We're always treating an inner state. So where does the diagnosis come in? A lot of it comes in because of experiencing, because of legal matters, and because of medicine, as I've said. Does it actually help? Well, I don't know. We'll talk about that in a minute, but you see, this is why the diagnosis is simply a tool. And we have to recognize that we're never treating the tool, we're treating the state. We're treating the thing that the tool is trying to capture, right? We're never treating a diagnosis. You're never treating a million people with depression. You're treating a million people with a set of inner states that they're experiencing, right? Now, that might sound subtle, but let that sink in. And I think you'll realize that it's actually pretty radical, because this is not how the health system tends to view things, as far as I'm aware. So let's move on. I've got a litmus test for you. And the litmus test is that, does having a diagnosis help you or does it harm you? And because both are true, diagnoses can help you. For one thing, they can provide you access to treatment, which for legal reasons, financial reasons, and so on, you wouldn't have otherwise. It's like the key that opens the door a lot of the time. They also give you an explanation. So instead of you walking away and saying, oh, I've got these inner states and I don't know why, well, I've got an explanation at least. May not be perfect, but I've got an explanation. I'm actually suffering from anxiety. There's nothing wrong with me as a person. I'm just in a certain state that we call anxiety, right? They can reassure you for that reason as well, because you realize, oh, many other people have experienced anxiety before, so, and if it's not always, many times it's curable and you can move on from it, so that can be very reassuring. They make the medical process possible, and they may help you see your condition as curable, which is really what, if it is indeed curable, is something we really want to to believe in and to know. Because if we don't, then the chances of us actually curing are much lower. I mean, there's so many stories and anecdotes and probably studies at this point about, you know, just your attitude and how you view illness really influences the chances of you getting better. However, though diagnoses can help, they can hurt. For one thing, they can be wrong. You can be given a diagnosis and put on a treatment plan that will never work because the apparent illness that you're suffering is not the right one. And you might say, well, of course it's not going to be perfect. But then I'd say, well, why diagnose if it's not perfect? Like, why give it a name? Why do we have to give it a name? They can have you identify as ill, as being an ill person, and they can make you start acting ill. I'm sure you've had this experience before that of someone who's like, it's not just that they're ill, but they're actually really identified with being an ill person and it becomes part of their identity. And you can sense that this actually makes it a lot worse for them. I've seen it so many times. And this is one of the things about diagnoses that I'm very suspicious about. And I said last week that, again, I'm not just standing on the sidelines here. In my sort of experience as a mental health patient, well, this is what happened to me. I started identifying with it and I started perpetuating the symptoms without knowing what I was doing. You see, it's interesting because humans identify with anything they can get their hands on. You know, think of the things that we identify with. We identify with the clothes we wear, with the place we live in, with the political party, with the sports team we follow, with our sexual preferences, with our hobbies, with our dietary preferences. Humans get identified with anything quite easily. So do you think that humans can become identified with a name that declares that there is something wrong with them? You bet. People get very identified with their diagnoses. Not only that, once you get identified with them, it's very easy to make it worse by looking for symptoms, by giving into your symptoms, by unconsciously exacerbating them, by becoming attached to the state of being ill, etc., etc. Diagnoses can make you feel like a hospital case, to be blunt about it. You know, you may be a perfectly healthy person in all aspects, and you know, when you're in your 20s or 30s, you know, you've lived for quite a few years, you get a diagnosis of like anxiety or depression or something, and all of a sudden, you know, you've never had health problems, and then you get a health problem, what happens? All of a sudden you're walking around taking tablets and going to see professionals and having to like make lifestyle changes. What happens? You think of yourself as a bit of a nutcase, right? And the diagnosis, because it's not just that diagnoses are a heuristic, it's also that we have ideas about what a diagnosis means. Like when I say the word anxiety or a person diagnosed with anxiety, all of a sudden it sounds very serious. It sounds like, oh, that means this and that and the next thing. And then when you get diagnosed with it, well, you're going to think those same things about yourself. They can lead to prescriptions which are unnecessary because, as I said last week, our medical system is based on medication, right? And so what happens, this locks you into the doctor's paradigm that medication will help you because fundamentally it's a biological problem or it's a neurological problem you're experiencing, which frankly just isn't true. Like, I don't know what to say, that's not true. A lot of illnesses have nothing to do with these things, or they're not caused by these things. It's just that the neurology or the biology is simply a correlate of the person's inner state, right? So once you get diagnosed, you get medication. Is that always a good thing? Far from it. You forget or overlook the fact that they are heuristics because doctors never tell you this. They never tell you it's a useful tool we use to diagnose, to, you know, understand people's inner states and get them treatment and so on. They never say that. They just say it as though it's this thing that's happening to you, and this is very problematic. They can have you unhealthily externalize the condition, because you think that, you know, if you're given a diagnosis, it has this name. When we name things, it gives them a certain separation from us, right? Anxiety, depression, ADHD, it seems like this distant, abstract thing that is somehow impinging itself on us, when that's really not true. And what's really necessary to get better and to make the changes required is a deep internalization, not identifying with it, but taking responsibility and realizing that you're doing a lot of things that are probably causing your state, right? But this diagnosis often doesn't do that. It basically does. It puts you in the medical paradigm, which is that this person is experiencing something external to them. Or you might think, I've got bad genetics. Oh, I've got this diagnosis. And, oh, well, my auntie had this when she was my age, and her granny had it when she was my age. Well, we could do a whole episode on that point alone, but I don't even know where to begin with that one, other than to say that that is a very slippery path to go down and a very just potentially disastrous, to be quite honest with you. So, what are some of the do's when it comes to diagnoses? And again, a disclaimer, I'm not qualified to give diagnoses or to treat people for them. However, I do still have an opinion on this topic. What I would say is, first of all, when you're thinking about getting a diagnosis for someone, for something, get very clear about your state. First of all, remember, your state is primary, the diagnosis is secondary. The diagnosis is a label for the state that you are in, right? So what is your state at the moment, right? What is your state at the moment? Like, you tell me, what state are you in? At the moment, you say, I ask you, what state are you in? You say, oh, I'm depressed. And I say, no, what is your state? And you say, well, I'm struggling to get to work. I can't get up in the morning. I'm hardly eating now. You know, I can't be bothered going out, socializing, that kind of thing. That's what the condition looks like. Whether or not at some point we're going to call that depression or not is irrelevant. The state is what it is, right? So get very clear about the state, and then you're going to understand what's actually happening to you, because that is richer information than the word depression. And you might not even have depression, by the way. Consider once you know what inner state you're in, the reason that you're trying to find a diagnosis, consider what might be causing it, right? And no, genetics and neurology and biology, those are not good enough explanations. You know, if you're depressed, or if you're struggling to get up in the morning, struggling to go to work, you don't want to go socializing, what's actually causing that? So actually, what's causing that? And you might start to say, well, I hate my job, I hate my boss, I've got a long commute in the morning, I feel undervalued, I don't get paid well enough, etc., etc. That's what I'm getting at. They're not perfect answers, but you're starting to get to like very concrete, everyday human concerns that might explain why you can't get out of bed in the morning, right? So, and these are not medical issues. Having a long commute is not a medical issue, right? Nothing to do with neurology, that one. You have a long commute in the morning. Could that mean that you struggle to get out of bed? Of course. If you put it together with other factors, could that be a significant factor? Of course it could. This is one of the other things about like the standard medical paradigm that really pisses me off. It's like a doctor could come along and their explanation for this person's state would be, oh, you've got a serotonin deficiency, or something along those lines. I know it's more complicated than that. Or you could say, oh, well, you've just got depression. Just take this medicine, you'll be fine. Well, listen, how does knowing I have a serotonin deficiency help me with the problem that I can't get out of bed in the morning? How does that help me? In my opinion, it doesn't help whatsoever. Because serotonin, what does that mean? That's got nothing to do with our everyday life. Now, I'm not suggesting it's separate or irrelevant. What I'm saying is it's not grounded in anything. Like, it doesn't explain anything. It doesn't give us any useful information as people. right? And how does taking medicine change the fact you've got a long commute? Doesn't change anything. You're still going to have to get your long commute. Once you're taking your medicine, you'll just be taking it on your long commute now, right? So you just got like another thing to look forward to, right? And anyways, so once you've got clear about your state and you started to find like very concrete possible explanations for why this is happening, then consider, because listen, once you've done these things, you're starting to take the reins of it and you're starting to really ground the problem in everyday things that you can actually change, right? Now, I'm not saying the cause is always everyday things that you can change directly, but I think we would be very surprised if we just took full responsibility for these things, the change it could have. I would then ask you to consider if being diagnosed with depression in this case, or it could be stress or anxiety or whatever, is actually helpful. Like, is it going to help you overcome this problem of not being able to get up in the morning and hating your life? Or is it just going to sink you deeper? Really, like, really be honest about that. Because you could just work with someone and they could just know about your inner state and they could help you address that without reference to a diagnosis. They could do that, right? So that you might not need a diagnosis, and in fact, the diagnosis might just make you worse, right? Why do you want a diagnosis? If you want a diagnosis, why do you want a diagnosis? Why is it not enough to know what your inner state is, right? Well, why is that not enough? Why is it not enough to say, I don't want to go to work, I can't be bored socializing, this and that. Why is that not enough? How is the label helping? And that, like, seriously, this is serious. This is serious. How does it help? Does it help you? Ask yourself. And no one ever asks you to do this. Remember that the label is not your inner state. It's a heuristic. It's a practical tool that is used to help solve the problem, right? And maybe you think you want the diagnosis for, like, positive reasons, shall we say, but maybe you want it for reasons like you want to feel validated, you want to feel like someone understands you, you want to feel like you're not in it alone. But see, this has nothing to do with your actual condition. These are just needs, right? I'm not saying they're needs that you shouldn't have. I'm just saying that they are needs, and maybe the best way to satisfy those needs is not to get a diagnosis about a serious health condition, right? So really look at your motives as well. If you conclude, I do want a diagnosis, what are your motives for that? Like, be very honest with yourself. Why do you want for someone to tell you that you have a condition? Why? And then even if you get a diagnosis, I really want to encourage you, as I said earlier, not to make an identity out of it. It's a handy label. It's a practical tool. It is not a permanent state that you have to be in for the rest of your life. Like, oh, I'm a depressed person. No, that's not what a diagnosis is. And it's not a personality type either, which is kind of the same thing as what I just said. But the diagnosis doesn't define you as a person. It tries to capture the state that you are in right now, or when you go to the doctor's office. That's really what it's trying to do. So, and I warned against this earlier, but so I won't go into it, but as soon as you make an identity of the illness, wow, the diagnosis is not doing what it's supposed to do, because it's not going to help you, because you're starting to identify with it and you're not going to let it go once you're identified. So, and also, whether you've been diagnosed or not, you've got to make real changes in your life that will directly address the problem. Like, if you're, let's say, even if you have been diagnosed with depression, maybe the fundamental cause of that is the fact that you hate your job. Well, no matter how much depression work you do, no matter how much medicine you take, it seems quite obvious that if you don't change your job, you don't change that part of your life, it's never going to go away. Because the fundamental thing is not being addressed. Sounds so simple, but I can honestly tell you, like, from direct, from first-hand experience, that not very often, in my opinion, does the root cause actually get addressed at all when it comes to things like depression and so on. And the one thing I'd always asked myself was, is this helping me or is it actually hurting me? And in my case, it was hurting me. And if only I knew then what I do now when it comes to diagnoses. So that's all, folks, for this mini series on the diagnosis obsession. Again, I really encourage you to go back and listen to part one now that we have come to the end. Before I leave you, just want to say I've got new long form episodes every Wednesday with snippets on Thursday, Sunday and Tuesday, all at 9 p.m. Central European Time, 8 p.m. UK Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Make sure to subscribe on Apple or Spotify. Follow my fortnightly newsletter to go deep. And if you want to go really deep, my books are available via the link in the description. The next long-form episode will be part of my July series. And I'm not going to tell you. I'm going to leave it suspended in mid-air. Next Wednesday, I'll be starting a brand new series for the month of July. Until then, take care, and I'll see you very soon.